I was like, what? Like, yeah. Like, what in the fuck is going on? And there's two sides to every story. And after my initial pain, and it just hurts my heart so much to think that this is the scenario that we found ourselves in,
yeah.
Right? And we created it.
Connect with us on the Emotion Wellness Podcast for a transformative journey of human connection. Witness personal stories, improve your mental health education, and acquire valuable resources for optimizing your well-being. Delve into the raw and courageous narratives of individuals who have thrived through adversity, gained clarity amongst the ashes, and emerged with an unshakable mindset. Available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And visit emotionwellness.com for more information.
I was going to kind of have you take us back to the beginning. And I think we know a lot of these stories, but yeah. The public doesn't. Of what was the, you know, first impetus for the idea behind Emotion. And I think I kind of know where you might take that. And then I think why San Antonio?
The concept for Emotion was originally just a concept to get clients in a small town in Arizona moving. You know, I wanted to change the experience that I was having in the managed care space where insurance was paying for treatment. Mm. I didn't have any, I'd been in the field about 10 years. I didn't have any experience with insurance. I worked for family in Arizona, Patrick and Betsy Brasso. They have children that are involved with the business. Adolescent, boarding school, transitional living program, phenomenal program, phenomenal people, amazing. Had some of the best moments in my career and in my life working for them. They were absolutely incredible. And they, that's where I got to take the kids on trips to like Nepal and Peru and do all these really cool things.
What age was this?
For me?
Yeah.
I was probably, well, I started at 30. I was three years sober when I started working for them. It was my second gig. My first gig was with behavioral modification. Didn't know anything about it. I just knew I was like, they said, hey, I need you to work with kids. And I was like, okay, what do you do? And they're like, you're going to take them on hikes and go snowboarding. And I was like, you get paid for that shit? I'm like, sweet, let's do it. What ended up happening was the program was run by a person that I'm not going to bring up, but basically I got to see some stuff that I didn't agree with and I left. And then I found, it's called Imbalance Ranch Academy. And I found Patrick and I interviewed and my first gig was literally a snowboard trip. So I was like, I used to joke around, like I suck at snowboarding and I'm basically a professional snowboarder because I'm getting paid, you know? And the kids worked me, the mountain worked me. And that's how I cut my teeth and earned my stripes working with adolescents was in that program. And I got to just see and do so many amazing things. And it's funny how in life, you're getting prepared for things that you don't know. And I'm sure everybody has these moments, but I look back now, hindsight is like, oh, the experiential things that we were developing and the opportunities I had to create and all the things I got to do there benefited me in this process because it showed me how to take normal everyday things and turn them into therapeutic experiences. And that's kind of what we did with fitness, mm-hmm. right? Is we took a fitness class and we turned it into a group process and we made it an experiential methodology. And then you end up with these pretty incredible results. So that's kind of like the background of like how I was prepared for it. The way that I got the idea for it was a combination of really being frustrated, sad, and be honest, quite pissed off about what I was seeing. You know, the substance use industry has a lot of beautiful people in it and it has a lot of, like anything, it has a lot of people who are driven by fear and greed and things that can create harm for other people, right? And so I got to see a lot of different things. And I noticed that we were working in very small rooms that were overpacked and the client experience was not good at all. And I kept asking questions like, how many programs have you been to and where have you gone? And the young kids would say, I've been to 7. And I was like, 7? Like, where's that across the country? No, here in town.
Yeah.
But like, what's the difference? Like, what makes them different? Nothing. The staff. Like, they're all the same. They all had very archaic ways of dealing with people. And, you know, it's a lot of forced, oppressive behavioral modification concepts that, like, cause a lot of harm, you know, and I didn't agree with. And I knew there had to be something different. It had to be something better. And I was really questioning, like, my position. I had a ton of student loan debt. I went to get licensed as a therapist. So I thought that was the way you had to be. I'm listening to people that I'm working with in a therapy center, and they're telling me they're therapists. And I'm like, well, where'd you go to school? And they're like, what do you mean school? School? Like, but yeah, fucking school. Where'd you go to school?
Yeah, wow.
And I was like, how are you a therapist? And then I said, well, what did I do wrong? I went to school to become a therapist when I could have just literally come walking off the street, come to find out that's not how it works, but that's how it was working. And so, having my own personal recovery, suffering from the things that I suffer from, the isolation, the loneliness, the unbalanced neurochemistry, I started to get mentally unwell. And I've always been into the gym and fitness. And I called Tony, if you're listening, and he knows this. Tony is the son of Patrick at the boarding school. And I had called him and I said, hey, I just need something different, man. Like, I'm struggling. I'm lonely. Mm-hmm. And he said, go to CrossFit. I'm like, yeah, fuck CrossFit, dude. Like, yeah. You know, I had the power lifter. Like, you know, I saw the videos online and made fun of it. And I would say, against my better judgment, I went to a CrossFit class at a place called Captain CrossFit. And I had no idea at the time it was owned by one half of the partnership that started CrossFit, like the owner, okay. The people, like, yeah, it was the two husband and wife team. And didn't know anybody there. And now, mind you, I'm 6'4", 285, 290 power lifter.
Yeah.
I'm in the parking lot on the phone with my sponsor in AA doing a fear and 10 step because I'm scared
to go into the gym. Yeah. Wow.
I was scared. Here's what I was scared about. I was pretty sure I wasn't going to be tested by anyone in the gym,
right,
strength-wise. But my visuals of CrossFit were super lean, like Adonis looking. You know
of
what
course.
I mean?
Of course, yeah.
And the games is really... CrossFit games is really, I think, what a lot of people have as their kind of idea about CrossFit. And that's not what CrossFit is at all. But I went in and... It's kind of wild. Boxes, box jumps, things like that. They had boxes stacked up. Now, I grew up with my stepdad, who I called dad. And when he passed away, it was pretty impactful, and I had a hard time with it. And one of the things that came out of it was, like, I ended up, the family system got, everybody got tattoos of dragonflies, because there's experience with dragonflies. Talk about that later. But anyway, I got this dragonfly tattoo on my foot, and it represents the loss of my father. And I walk in this gym and there's 3 cups, like water bottles, on these boxes in the middle of the floor. Hmm. And they all have dragonflies on them. Not real ones, but like graphics. And right. I was like, okay. And then there was a guy named Tony that was coaching. And I did my first class. And I was so frustrated with myself because the fear was that we're going to have to run. And right. Like, here's the thing. Most CrossFit classes, you're not running a lot, but it's enough to be like, I don't want to run.
Yeah, right? Coming from a power lifter, coming from a static background,
yeah,
that's intimidating.
So there was it was 3 or 4 rounds, 400 meters with a bunch of other stuff in between. There was a guy by the name of Mark who became pretty good friends of mine. You just get to meet some really cool people, you know, over time. And there's a story about Captain CrossFit. My friend Dave Franz, man, he's amazing. He's the one that, and he'll come into play here in a second. But so I do this class. Mark's definitely older than I am. At the time, I was probably like, this is an old guy, you know, because I'm in my 30s. And
he's to me now.
Yeah, sorry. Pretty much. Yeah. He was definitely older than I am now, too. But he cleaned the floor with me. Like, he was done way before I was. Hmm. And I was on my third or fourth run, and I had been experiencing the inner critic for quite some time. And, you know, you're fat, you're late, this is not, you're like all the things, right? Shredding myself. And out of nowhere, I feel this like shoulder bump, and he's like, I got you, let's do this. And it was this experience in my body and in my mind where, and my spirit, I think, where it was kind of like, it wasn't kind of, it was. What do you know about that, Jamie? Soft talk, we're getting rid of it. I just hadn't felt that way in a long time. You know, like, dude, this guy has me. Like, I think I had been so isolated for so long. So it felt like, damn, okay, somebody has my back. This is a really cool feeling. And then it was like, this is what my clients need. Like, this is what, I mean, I'm not so unique. Sometimes I think I am, but I'm not so unique that, like, I'm the only one that suffers in this way. Like, there's lots of people who are suffering from, and they're surrounded by people, and they just can't seem to get close. So I was like, man, this is what my clients need. And I didn't want to do it. Like, I was like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
But I'm driven by service to other people, and it's been a motivator of mine for a long time. And so I think, what happened for me was I said, I'm going to do this no matter what. And then I quit, like, a weekend. Wow. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm like, this is too hard. I was getting my ass kicked. So I'm at home, and I haven't told anybody that I quit. I'm just, like, not going to the gym.
Yeah.
And I'm working, and I'm seeing more and more, you know, just stuff in the industry that I don't like. And I'm you know, I want to feel fulfilled. I want to feel purposeful. I want to feel like I'm making a difference. And I didn't feel that way. I got good reviews, and people liked what I was doing, but I just felt like I was there's a quote by Howard Zinn, and he says, you can't be neutral on a moving train. And I thought, like, I'm on this train of, like, substance use treatment that I just find absolutely disgusting. Like, these are just, I'm not saying I feel this way today, but, man, back then I was like, this is disgusting. And I don't feel clean, and I don't feel good. And I feel like I'm either going to check out, I'm going to go a different route, or I'm going to, like, make a huge difference. So I got sick of myself being at home, couldn't live with myself, quitting. I go back to the gym, and it sticks. And I end up talking to the owner at the time, whose name was Dave Franz, and I said, hey, I want to do this. I said, I want to do this thing, and I got an idea, and I noticed this building, you have to understand, at the time, this was the largest CrossFit gym in the world. It was like 20,000 square feet. I mean, they just had so much space. And they had this 4,000 square foot, I call it a closet, where, like, they just kept gear, and they had, like, a climbing wall. So I said, hey, you don't use that room. What if you let me use that room to run classes for these people? Hmm. In my naivety, I didn't fully understand the damage to the ecosystem of that small town that the ownership of treatment centers had really created. So what they had done is they had used the local YMCA and other gyms as sort of like a means to kill time, but they weren't providing the right supervision, right? So these people would go in who are dealing with addiction and all kinds of stuff, and they have impulsivity issues, and they, you know, are tempted by, you know, the idea of using still or being triggered. And then they weren't unsupervised, so they would go into these gyms, and then people would, sometimes they'd steal something, or they would cause problems, and they were not being mentored in the way that they needed. So what happened was the local townspeople had a pretty bad image of what this is.
Right.
And this population. So it's very stigmatized anyway, and then this didn't help. And at the time, one of the other owners was the main manager at the YMCA. So she's like, wait, you want to bring a bunch of addicts and alcoholics into this gym and run classes?
No chance.
No way. Mm-hmm. No way. They knew me. They were willing to take a chance. And and they did. Like, they totally gave us an opportunity. And this is the part that's hard for me, because it's like, man, it makes me so angry. But it's like the thing that showed me how important it is to work to create change. Like it was like, so Michelle and Dave owned the gym. They were super good people. Like I can't speak high, like they there's we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for them. I wouldn't be here. I know that. They helped get me started. They didn't charge me. They allowed me to like use the space for a while. We did work out some stuff later, but like they just allowed me to do what I needed to do. But the caveat was they said, hey, we'll give you the backspace, but we're going to need to put a porta potty outside.
Oh, jeez.
So, what I heard was, your people can use this space, but they're not good enough to use the toilet.
Jesus.
Now I'm aware that addicts and alcoholics are not the only people to ever have experienced that. I'm not here, like, but man, I was like, what? Like, yeah. Like, what in the fuck is going on? And there's two sides to every story. And after my initial pain, and it just hurts my heart so much to think that this is the scenario that we found ourselves in.
Yeah.
Right. And we created it. Mm. Like owners of substance use treatment centers created that mentality. People didn't just wake up in Prescott, Arizona one day and say, we want to hate and be afraid of people in substance use. Mismanagement, unethical practices, and a bunch of fucking nonsense created this scenario where people had to use a fucking porta potty. Like, so I said, give me the porta potty. That's my ticket in. And I said, I promise you, in 2 weeks, you're taking it back. They won't be here longer than 2 weeks. Everybody thought I was nuts. Everybody thought I was crazy. Like, you're not going to get addicts to work out. You're not going to get And you've seen it here. Yeah. People will puke their guts out and keep running. Like there's a thing, breed. Right?
Yeah.
And so, I just got to be, this is not about Dave and Michelle were operating from a perspective of, we have a business to run. We don't want to hurt our membership. And they had to play that game. I get that. Like, we have members who don't see this population the same way you do.
The perception was there. Yeah.
And we're afraid of what's going to happen in the bathroom. I mean, you talk to Jamie, right? What happens in a bathroom with people with addiction? Like, they're going to shoot up. They're going to do stuff. It's going to... So I understand where it was coming from. But, man, it just hurt my heart so bad. So they bring the porta potty. They let me do classes. And my mission was to change the game. Like, it was to change. And we did. People came to class. At that point in time, I'm just doing fitness classes. I think that's what's going to happen. I'm going to do fitness classes for people who are in treatment. Right. And we're just going to run. And it started to get a lot of traction. And so they would come. And I would say, okay, when we're done, next door, we're going to go next door. We're going to clean the benches. We're going to put all the equipment away. We're going to ask the owners what we can do. We're going to sweep. We're going to pick up trash. We're going to do whatever we can to say, hey, thanks for letting us be here. And I talked to the group and the people around, like, hey, look, here's the deal. You are being stigmatized based on something that you're suffering from. And some of it is our own behavior has created it. Mm. And people who are charged with your treatment have created it, and just a general national conversation, right? So we have a couple of options. We can be angry at that and put our middle fingers up and say, screw you, or we can say, you know what, we'll work extra hard to show you who we really are.
Right. And that's a powerful thing for most addicts and alcoholics, family members, past friends, whoever, that don't see them in good light. It's a good lesson for...
And everybody bought in.
Wow.
Everybody. And so they took the porta potty away. What was really cool is they had cameras in there, and at one point, something got stolen. And there was like a, hey, we're in this, who's going to get, you know what I mean? And it got brought up. They were really cool about it, but like, it turned out it wasn't our people. And I knew. I said, that's not anybody here. And it was such a cool process that the ownership team was like, yeah, we're not saying it's, but we're looking everywhere. And then it was like, yeah, okay, great. It's not your group. And they allowed me to do, so the Tillman Military Scholar Foundation, which I'm a part of, they sent somebody to do a piece on what we were doing. And so it was in the news. And I asked the ownership if they would be willing to do interviews. And Michelle and Dave said, yeah, of course. So Michelle was doing her interview, started crying. She's like, I've never seen. She said, we don't have athletes that pay to come here that put in the effort, right? Or commit to each other the way that this group of people. Wow. So we got to change how people saw us, how they saw addiction. We also got an opportunity to serve and give back where that particular gym hosts a competition known as the Hot Shot 19 workout, which is where 19 firefighters lost their lives. Yeah. Tragic, just tragic. And it was a small town, and a lot of the people who lost their lives were members of this gym, or it just devastated the town. So they would always do this comp and raise money and donate to, I think it was some education thing for firefighting or something, but it was in order to raise money. People from, in Prescott, Arizona, it's like down the mountain. So like you have Phoenix and then two, so people from all over state would come. Right. It was huge. And our group would do all the weeding, and like we presented it to the group like, hey, how do you feel about serving some first responders? Now, lots of the people that we were working with had either been saved by a first responder,
right,
or yeah, had run-ins with police. Mm-hmm. So it was this really cool process of like bringing two populations together to have a conversation around like, this is who we are, this is where we were coming from, and then to introduce a different perspective to both sides, right? Mm. So I know that's a long way of describing, like, that's how this thing started. That was the thing that got me going. I got to see the results. It was about 2 years of, I'm pretty sure it was about 2 years straight, it was 6 days a week. I just ran classes all day. That's all I did.
Yeah.
Then I got the bright idea to start offering it as like a therapeutic service. And I thought, this is brilliant. Like, so many centers are going to be like, this is amazing. Right. Like, it's good for the clients. And it was not, that wasn't the case.
Really?
It was, how are we going to get paid for it? Now, I get it. I lean a little bit more on the idealistic side of things. It's a business. I understand that. I just really thought in my naivety, like, they're just going to love the fact that this thing is, people are excited about it.
Yeah, good for the people.
So undeterred, I was like, you know, I have to find a way around that. So I figured a way to, that's what got me creating the experiential process of like, we're going to do experiential therapy. We're going to use, it's just like using Rope's course or anything else. Like,
of course,
I'm going to start to do this thing. And so that's what I did. And I created, and I started running group, and I would write notes for, I would do the note. I have the credentials, whatever. So that's kind of what I did for a little bit. And then a guy came and saw what we did one day, and he threw a book in front of me. He put a title in front of me. He said, you should check out this book. And it was basically a meta-analysis of everything we were doing, like, without knowing it. It was all about the effects of exercise on neurochemistry, on mental health. And then I just got in a rabbit hole. Like, I went down a research and inquiry around, where does this thing, what does it do? How does it, which led me into like how we evolved as human beings, and like, we'll break it all down in this.
What was that book?
It's called Spark, Dr. John Rady. And I actually got to spend some time with him and his people. And he's definitely, I would consider, the foremost authority on like the research and what this thing is. And he's written several books. It just highlighted, like, and it validated
everything, right? You're doing.
Super, super validating. Around that time, it's about 12 years ago, I was 10 years ago, I was, you know, I started doing cold plunging before it was like a thing. I was just always into sort of like, what's the next thing, and how do I optimize? You know, I got into hiking. I saw Wim Hof on Vice. That's what happened. And I was like, damn, the dude's wild.
Yeah, I remember when that came out.
And then I wanted to see about, I was dating a girl in Idaho at the time, and I wanted to see about the hiking without a shirt off in the wintertime and doing all that kind of stuff. So I was like, because Arizona gets cold, but not like, you know, the mountains of Idaho. So anyway, I would do all that kind of stuff, and I saw how much it benefited me, and I figured, you know, and the ego that I have is like, well, dude, if it helps me, it'll help anybody because I'm so twisted or whatever. And yeah, so I just started playing around with working out outside in the cold. I started messing. I wasn't doing much sauna work at the time. I was doing a lot of cold work.
Right. But it's an experience.
Mm-hmm.
What other experience can you have and bring to the clients?
Yeah. And we weren't doing, I didn't do any cold stuff with the clients at the time. This was just for about
just your own personal
a bunch
journey.
Of years, for 4 or 5 years, it was just the fitness. Then I got an opportunity to come to Texas, and well, I took it. I had what? Back it up 1 sec. I got an opportunity to own a program in Arizona, be a partnership. And around this time, it was the answer to the dilemma that I had. I was like, I cannot represent. I can't represent shit anymore. Like I can't. I can't be part of. I cannot do it if it's helping support somebody who I know is not. And I got. I was in pretty bad shape. Like I had been fired from a job. Never been fired. Like definitely not fired in sobriety. And I needed the money. And I got offered a gig to work for somebody. I'm like, I can't work. I'm not gonna call them out, but I'm like, I'm not working for that person. There's no way. Like yeah. I will not been help there. Them put 1 cent in there. There's no way I will do that. Like, I'll live in a dumpster before I do that is really where I was at. And I was holding out. And then I got a call from a guy. People know the story, but I was on my way to the airport to go to Alaska. And people who know me know that back then Alaska was like the more than the final frontier. Like, it literally was going to be my exit. And I had a plan to take my life. And I had bought the ticket. I got rid of my cane Corso at the time. And it was late at night, and I was driving, and a guy calls me, and he happened to be Mr. Greg Struve. He happened to be, he really believed in what I was doing, and we used to meet a lot. He was a clinical director at a place I was working at, and we used to meet a lot, and he would ask me. We would spend most of my clinical supervision talking about, like, the fitness stuff, you know? He believed in it. He was a partner with these group of guys, and this story is just wild to me. So he says, I'm in the car going to the airport to move to Juneau, Alaska in November. Okay.
Wow.
I don't know if you know anything about Alaska, but you don't want to be there in November.
That's a terrible time to go.
I was like, I'll give it 90 days. Maybe. I'm going to see how it is when I get there. Maybe I'll give it 90 days. Maybe I'll go right away. But I want to be closer to where I will pull the trigger. And my plan was, if I get here and things don't change, I was gonna work for a nonprofit and I feel the same, I'm gonna find a bear den, I'm just gonna take my life and then I'll get eaten. My whole thing is, whenever I've thought about like taking my life, I just wanna disappear. I don't want anyone to ever find me, sort of like the great mystery.
Totally back into the earth.
Dude. So he calls and says, hey, Jesus told me to call you. And I don't know if you've ever had anybody call you and say that, but it'll get your attention. Right. And I was like, and he just said, hey, I feel like you haven't really been talking to God. And I think you should.
Wow.
And I was like, now he was absolutely correct. And he also said, I have a proposition for you. And so he said, I want you to come on board this thing, you know, probably work out to be ownership. Your reputation, the work that you do, you feel like you're strong. You have a strong enough personality to like write the ship. We've been doing some stuff the way we don't like doing it. We want to change. And I applauded that. I said, yeah, that's amazing. But I was still pretty committed to Alaska. And he said, well, why don't you just take 48 hours, talk to God. He probably would like to hear from you. And then let me know. I didn't tell him what I was doing, but I hung up the phone. I turned my car on. I went home, got my dog back. I said, hey, in a couple of days, I gave it to my neighbors.
Okay.
In a couple of days, you might get the dog back, but right now I'm going to keep it. And I ended up thinking about it for 24 hours and made the decision to call him back and say, hey, I'll do this. That put me in place to take my concept for the very first time and put it in a center. So we weren't like at a gym anymore.
Wow.
We were like in a build. We found a building. It was literally like, think about like a PT office building. And that's what it was. It was an old PT office building. It was a beautiful building. It had a small pool in it. It had such a great view. It was amazing. But it was carpeted and it was like offices. And we just put a gym in the middle.
Wow.
So you'd go to your office and there'd be like pull-up bars across and there was equipment in the corner. Yeah. It was wild. Yeah.
Now, how much time was that from when you first started doing those classes to getting that first program into a center?
Probably about 3.5 years.
And that was, at least conceptually, the goal from the beginning.
I had no idea. I think the goal from the beginning was I'm just going to create a space for people to come, and I'm going to work with them. And I was so enthralled and impressed by what had happened with that guy.
Yeah.
That I was like, if I can give this to people, that'll just help, right? And maybe, I think at the time I thought it'll turn into a CrossFit gym for mental health. Like, that's what I'll probably end up doing. I hadn't really conceived yet of like, I wasn't sure I wanted to stay in.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure I wanted to be in the industry, you know?
So now you're in this carpeted building.
Yeah. and that was great. That was 2 years. It was a PHP IOP, for those of you who don't know. It was like levels of care. We had people with us. We had sober living. We did a lot of really, really cool stuff. In fact, I know that a couple of them have, so this thing has been called everything. Like, it's so funny. So in Arizona, we called it Recover Strong. When I first moved to Texas, we called it Kinetic Recovery, and now it's just the Emotion Wellness Method.
Yeah.
You know, and so a couple of the guys, I'm pretty sure, took the concept and brought it to Hawaii, and they're doing a version of it. I did that for 2 years, and then I just wasn't feeling like I wasn't feeling that Arizona was where I wanted to be. And I wanted something different, and I really couldn't see anything. I'm pretty impatient, as you guys know, and I didn't want to see, I couldn't see anything. It was like, where are we headed? What's going to go? And so a friend of mine had called me and said, there's a treatment center down here. They want to go multiple locations. It just seemed like, man, okay, sweet. Like,
jump on.
So I moved to Texas. I took that, I sold my, got worked out a deal with my partners. I left, they kept the center. I came down here, built an IOP for a place here in town, a woman that is out of Utah. And in the beginning, it was really cool. I think what was happening is I was getting to see, for whatever reason, I need a lot of validation before I'm like, believe in myself. You know? So it was like, I had all this feedback in Arizona. In fact, I moved to Prescott, Arizona, because I was like, oh man, the Brazos have been so good to me. Maybe they just treat me the way they treat me because like, they just care about me. As opposed to like, I'm really good at what I do. Let me go start over and see if I can redo it. That's like what I do. I get things, yes. It gets flowing and everything's great. And then I'm like, let me drop a grenade and frag out. And then
let's
I go.
Repeat that cycle. Let's
so I did that in Arizona, proved it. I moved to Texas, did it. In fact, you know, you're friends with a bunch of the guys that first went through. And so it created a really cool community. It was awesome. Then COVID hit. And so we were fortunate in that COVID hit and we were exempt because we were mental health. So I had a place to work out. We could still work with people, but not a lot of people were traveling and in the treatment we were lucky to survive financially. But at the time I was like, this sounds crazy to me right now, but like probably I wasn't a personal trainer, but like I was getting paid a pretty decent salary and I'm like in charge of this outpatient center and I'm probably the highest paid personal trainer in Texas at the time with one of the very few gyms that could stay open.
Right.
And I'm running group twice a week. That was about it.
Wow.
Like it was super easy, but I was so bored. Like, and I think I was also at that place where, this is starting to get smooth.
Yeah.
Let me disrupt it. Right. Excuse me. So I disrupted it and I went with the guy who brought me to Texas. I went to a place in Mississippi, had a amazing and very interesting experience in Mississippi. Got to do the dream. Like basically a guy gave me a blank check, said, build a gym, do your thing. And it didn't work out again. And it's not anyone's one person's fault. Like, I had my own stuff happening. And so beginning this conversation, I was talking about things that happen to you to prepare you for the next. And so this whole time I don't know this, but I'm being prepared. I've had a dream in my mind to own my own place for the longest time. I also have, or had up until about 2 years ago, an extremely poor sense of self-confidence. And my self-conscious was driving the bus, and I was not worthy. Like, I've got messaging from childhood and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so around every corner that I had an opportunity to, like, really do something with my life, I found a way to destroy it because I, like, subconsciously, I don't know what to do if it actually happens.
That's it.
So Mississippi was not because of any one thing, but Mississippi, the time frame of my life in Mississippi, coming back from that was really hard. I was in a seriously dysfunctional relationship with someone where I was probably most of the dysfunction, you know? And I was just kind of like, I was just really struggling. I just wasn't happy. And I had this dream. When you have a dream and you don't have any belief that you can pull it off, it's a torturous place to be. Because it's like, I know what I want to accomplish, but it'll never happen. Like, it's that. And it's disgusting to talk about in a way for me, because I'm like, it's so, I see it now. Like, I'm different. I was able to do some stuff finally, but it just held me back. So I leave Mississippi, come back to San Antonio, and I'm like broke and don't have a job, and I'm not going back to. So I take a job for a treatment center in town, pretty good residential program, needed a lot of cleaning up, got an opportunity to go into a chaotic environment, cleaned it up. Once it was clean and things were smooth, I was like, peace, right. I'm out.
Now it's easy, yeah.
Went back to work for the person that I moved to Texas to work for that I did not particularly like or think was a very good person. But I was like, I want something different, and I want another opportunity, and I want to make some money. And so I got a job. And then I was told I could take over. So I'm like, oh, it's going to be my, I'll be able to take it over.
Yeah.
It's not how it worked out. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I'll take responsibility. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Like,
once again. Didn't know it.
The universe is conspiring, conspiring. It's like, idiot, you can't see it. Idiot, yeah. You can't see it, but we're moving you close. I need you to get ready because we have to do something.
It's conspiring until it's inspiring.
Dude, so that happens. And then it's like, I mean, I was just like, what now? I had been dabbling with finding investment money because pulling this off, the reason people don't do this, one, takes a lot of experience to learn how to, I mean, this is a unique process, but let's just say the process wasn't unique. It's just expensive. Like the average program owner, especially with the way reimbursement rates are, they don't want to sink them. I get it. It's a huge risk. I'm just a knucklehead that wants to take that risk, you know, and I believe in it enough. But like, I was searching for investors, looking for money. And I had some friends that were helping me and we just weren't getting anywhere. It's like, it's been like a year and a half and, really wasn't moving. And so what ends up happening is I end up in a scenario where I was much closer to ending my life than I had been in Alaska. And I avoid that through I think the universe and God stepped in again and said, do not yet, like, you got something for you. And I end up leaving the relationship, leaving everything, moving into a friend's house here in town. And I'm 46 years old at the time. I'm 18 years sober. And I am just a broken individual. Like, I'm just definitely did not feel like a man whatsoever. Like, broke financially, spiritually, full of self-pity, victim mentality, frustrated, just angry. And like, what? Like, what was it all for? And now I'm like, looking around for somebody to blame. I'm in an empty room with a fucking air mattress. You know what I mean? It's like, bro, it's there's only one person, dude. Take a look in the mirror.
Yeah.
So I tell the story a lot, but I don't know if it was a voice or a thought, but the concept or the idea came that Nobody's coming, bro. Nobody. There's no backup plan. There's no parachute. There's no. There's no nothing. Like, and the phone definitely wasn't ringing. I emerged from that experience with myself with an idea that I had to be the one to save myself. And I had never said that to myself. I had always kind of hoped for, I mean, I'll be honest, and it's embarrassing to talk about, but I always hoped for like some Hail Mary. Like there was just going to be a...
Something that...
I don't know, man. Like up, a... Like a... A security truck drops a couple bags of money. You know what I mean? Like, you just stumble. You're walking through a field, and you just stumble across something that looks like an antique, and it's worth $10 million. You know what I mean? Like, just something that was going to... And it was always, like, a big thing. A big check was going to fix it, right? And I got to see that it was this inside job that I needed to address, and I still had some deep, deep wounds from childhood. And I had a perspective that needed to be adjusted and brain chemistry that needed to be balanced and regulated. So I accepted the challenge and I did a bunch of work. And a good friend of mine, Dr. Kelly, basically was a catalyst for dramatic, dramatic, massive action. Like his process with me, he gave me, I couldn't afford him, so he gave me free therapy. He did something with me that in a one moment changed my entire life. Like literally opened up an envelope. He had listened to my story. Some people know this story, and like it just changed everything for me in the moment. It wasn't enough though. Like it was enough to get me going.
Yeah.
But I was like, nah, I gotta do the work. So I did the work. I took about 6 or 7 months of just straight narrative, working on my language. I hadn't yet found Enlifted, which that's another episode, but like I want to give Mark England his, like that, it's just so good. But I'd started my own way of addressing my language and the way that I saw myself. I wrote myself a check for $500,000 and said I'm going to cash it by the end of the year. This was in April of 22. In October, I cashed that check.
Wow.
And it was maybe a little bit sooner. And
God, the irony of that.
Yeah. And it's crazy because
the check was coming, but you had to do the work first.
And I always thought a big check was going to save my life. It's like, but my idea of a big check was like, I'm going to be driving what I want to drive. Nothing's changed. Like I literally, I live in a small place. I drive a 200,000 mile Subaru, nothing's changed. Right. Yeah. Except everything's changed. And we have this process here and we have this opportunity. And so it came in the form of emotion wellness, and it just was one of those things where, okay, someone took a chance on me, just like Mark did when he helped me in CrossFit, right? Someone, mm-hmm. they lined up shoulder to shoulder and handed me money and said, I believe in your process. Let's do this. Just like Mark lined up shoulder to shoulder and said, I got you. So, you know, Douglas said, I got you, and we're going to do this. And so finally was able to put all of the things that I had gathered and kept me alive under one roof and have operational control so that no one could come in and say, it's our money, we want to do it this way, or we don't like it was finally.
Yeah, this was it.
It was the thing. I mean, this is it. This is the thing. My whole life has come to this thing.
Wow.
And so I decided I'm going to do everything. We're cold plunge. And so you got to remember too, like think about this. 10 years ago, I mean, some of the people we work with, this guy over here, like, he don't remember life without Facebook. Like, I remember when Facebook wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
I remember when cell phones weren't a thing. Like, that's how we're talking, man, it's massive differences, right? But social media has changed the game. So where a random episode of Vice shows up, Wim Hof's on every social media. He's everywhere. Like, Joe Rogan has changed the game. Like all these people have literally like you get this exposure and it gets out to the masses. And then, so it was like, it's time. Like with all these things, the science is there. We know about neuroplasticity. We know about neurochemical regulation. Then, you know, Huberman comes out with his podcast. And so it's like, what happened with Spark started to happen all over again. I'm like, dude, yeah. This is what we've been saying for years.
The industry needs to change. What year was that book?
I don't know when it was written, but I found it in 2016, 17, something like that.
Yeah.
But it was happening all over again with social media. Like, you know, we know about dopamine, and I've been talking about the survival system, and I've been like telling people, like, look, I get it. Okay, we're powerless and we need God's help. But also, what's going on neurochemically? Like, this thing's a brain disorder. It's under the medical, it's in the DSM. It's like, we understand it from this perspective, but what's really going on, right? So really just wanted to start to lean into that as a professional therapist and helper, right? And so it was like, let's come up with this whole presentation and program and do it the way that we feel is the most effective and is going to be the best experience for the clients, right? So that's how this happened. And then I get to meet knuckleheads like you and Jamie and, you know what I mean? All like the universe just kept conspiring. I mean, check this out. You guys aren't seeing him on camera, but if anyone who knows Emotion Wellness knows Jamie, and Jamie is, he's a one of a kind, like literally a game changer here as far as what we do and the process, understands it, really have never been able to share what I do with somebody and have them. It's like if you create something and you want to share it with somebody, your biggest hope is that they totally get it.
Yeah.
And that's like him. He gets it. Like it's just we met at the detox center of a program that I was working at just on Sundays, which was the place that I had got hired right after Mississippi to like go fix.
You were and there one day a week.
Yeah, I just left there and I was like, I need clinical supervision. I'm busted right now. I'm going to coach CrossFit and work at the military hospital. And I was working one day a week. And this dude shows up in detox and I'm bored. And I'm like, I'm going to go see if I can talk this fool into like coming to my group. You know what I mean? He just looked like there's something about him. And we talk about it a lot, but he came to group. And then a year later, I mean, he's been with ever since we met. It's been like this. So there's just so many things that like pieces of the puzzle that came together. But that's the story of Emotion, really. It's like the name changes, and I, at the time, I used to judge myself like, bro, you can't even come up with a name for your shit. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? And, but I can see it wasn't none of those other, they're great names. And there's a guy in Hawaii who is using Recover Strong, and he was a coach at the place, Owen, and I love him. He's a great guy. Like, it's a great name. You have that. The place in Texas, we use Kinetic Recovery. Like, I own the rights to it, but didn't feel right. And then understanding energy and what we do and the emotion wellness, like, it's just perfect. I'm not trying to tell the world it's perfect. Just for me, it was perfect. This is it. This is, like, what we – and it's – I'm fairly certain, I won't say forever, but it's in its final iteration of names and branding, and I think it'll continue to grow and evolve as a process, but –
Man, it's first of all, thanks for sharing all that. It's a wild, it's a lot to process. Like I spend a lot of time talking about emotion, talking about my understanding of the process, what this place means to me, what this place is, how it functions for clients. I mean, the last 8 months, I would do that on a regular basis all the time. And one thing that I say a lot when people walk in here is for the last X amount of years, more than I can count, Jason Turner has been pouring himself into this final iteration. And like, and I didn't know the story. I didn't know the full story, but all these little pieces of the universe that have all amounted to the intentionality and the product that you're seeing here today, that it is emotion. And it's like, I mean, hearing all those little, you know, it's like a cycle that's happening but still moving forward, but you feel like it's moving backwards in the time, and you're you know, and this is it. This, and it's that's a lot to take in, but I'd love hearing that whole story, because There are so many little factors that I'm sure you can look back through your life and say, well, it did happen for all of these things to happen. And I think that people out there appreciate hearing that too.
And you had said, why San Antonio, right? And,
yeah.
Originally, you know, and I had narrowly escaped disaster several times with trying to go in a different direction with other people. Mm-hmm. And like, and it was like, it never worked out because it wasn't supposed to work out. And then I was the one that I needed to say, it's me. And then I went and chased the money myself. And it was like, yeah, the universe was just waiting for me to be like, bro, are you going to own this thing? Are you really going to? And so, when I looked around, I wanted to get back to my adolescent roots. Like, I wanted to serve. The thing about me, and I think everybody knows this, is like, you say what you want. I really want to be impactful. Like, at the end of the day, it's like, it's about impact. It's about how many people, where's the greatest need. And when I look around, the market's saturated with, I won't say it, but like, stuff that I think needs to be changed. I get it, right? There wasn't anything for adolescents in San Antonio. You were out there, like, start pulling people. Where do you, and at this time, Rise didn't have the campus that it had, like, all that hadn't happened. But like, it's like, where do you send a kid? We got an amazing process. I got a lot of experience. I mean, this is, I cut my teeth working with young people, and it's the most fertile time for the developing mind.
Yeah.
We can interrupt that change. Man, we can really change the course of a person's life. Of course, I want to help somebody at later stages, but man, I can change someone's 60-year progression versus like the last 20. Like, that's a lot of impact. So there was no adolescent programs, and that's what we did. We went with adolescents. And I knew I was going to eventually add adults, and I didn't know how quickly we would pick up speed, you know what I mean? So when we started, we were just running adolescent groups three times a week. And it was just me and Melissa. And then, you know, started to realize the need for adults and a bunch of other things that we wanted to, like the mental health memberships and all of that. So that's why San Antonio and Douglas, who helped, you know, with the majority of the funding, local San Antonio wanted to really make a difference here, right? So it's like, I wanted to honor that. And I don't care where I'm at, you know what I mean? Like, I've fallen in love with San Antonio, and I want to be here, and the people that I get to, I'm so grateful, right? The universe also said, okay, it's San Antonio because, I didn't know this at the time, I'm thinking it's just to serve kids, but because you're here, Jamie's here, you know what I mean? When I look at the team, the way everybody came in, I mean, this is like I feel like I'm finally living a story that I've dreamt about my whole life, not just like in the creation of stuff, but in the way people's lives change, like where I watched people create stuff and it's like, oh my God, they developed this and they met all the right people and they have these like, it's kind of like a Cinderella story, but it's like, it just seems really poetic.
Yeah.
And like, that's what I'm experiencing. Like, oh man, it's like all the right people and all the things that we get to do here. So even like how we developed, initially we came out with, and I one thing I've been really proud of besides all the stuff that we do is like, it sounds silly, but the website. Like at first I was like, man, I want a really unique website. I wanted to highlight how different we are. And we came out with this original version, which was really good in comparative to the market. It was like people, it got attention, and then we revamped it. And it was like, we honed in on who we are, what our mission is, all the things. I mean, even we do another clip someday to talk about Alex and the logo.
www.emotionwellness.com.
So, you know, it's kind of like, it's not kind of like, it is this thing that I'm just super proud of. The method, right? Looking at what we do, it was like, I didn't make the method to fit the hexagon. I asked the question to myself, let's look at what we do. And does what we do fit into this? Because it's this symbol came to us, to me for a reason. Right. So I was like, well, what's behind this? Right. As the carbon structure and sort of this building block of life.
Yeah.
And so I started to really, really whittle down. Cause you want, look, we do all kinds of stuff, right? Like the narrative and this and the red light. And so I said, well, okay, if I were to put this all on a board and whittle it down, what do we end up with? And we ended up with six pillars. Or six categories, and it includes everything we do, right? So you have movement, you have human connection, you have emotional regulation, you have outcomes, you have breath work, and you have self-concept. So in our program, in the curriculum, we're looking at how do we change our narrative? We do that with mindset. Now we do it within Lifted Method, and, you know, Jamie's getting spun up on that. We're about to complete level one. We're changing the narrative. We're using both mindset and words. We're also using physical activity, get people moving in their bodies. They start to create a different story. But I'm not a lazy fat whatever. I'm this other thing. Just like I did when I was running. I'm not this. I'm this other thing. We have emphasis on neurochemistry. So the concept is I'm not just this, like, drunken horse thief who is never going to change and is inherently bad. I'm a biological entity, right? Yeah. Human being that has neurochemistry and physiology that affects the way that I make decisions. I have parts of a brain that all work in conjunction with each other in a way that creates dysfunction for me as an addict. I have a pattern of use that continues to disrupt that neurochemistry. So we started to look at all of these components, and then we just put them in this method that worked really well as far as it fits the hexagon. I mean, that's cool branding and stuff like that, but at least in my opinion. But it really is, it's what we do. And it's it's one of the best summaries. If you were to say, hey, what's the, what do you guys do at Emotion? It's like, this is it. This is what someone's going to experience when they come in, aside from over-the-top service and excellence that we talk about as a team, right? And how we treat people and the follow-up and the, you know, it, all the way down to, like, when people go to sober living and we require, you know, communication sheets and we do all these extra things that make us work harder, but we know that, A, it's best for the client, and B, the outcomes are going to be better, right? So we as a team, I'm so grateful that we're all committed to our why, which is a completely new experience for the patient.
Yeah. Like
the majority, a good portion of substance use patients have been to other programs. I don't know the exact figure. I even think if someone rips out a number, they might sound like they know what they're talking about, but I don't even know that. But I'm gonna say in my experience, anecdotally, it is extremely high. In fact, it's rare when someone shows up here and they're a substance use client and you're like, hey, have you been to treatment? Yeah. No, like, it's always, I've been to 2, 3, 4, sometimes more programs, right? Yeah. So the why is, for us, is like, the why is, it's you. It's whoever's listening to this that needs help. It's when you walk in this building, you're going to have a completely different interpretation of what it means to enter a mental health facility. Like, the minute you walk in.
Every time.
And that is going to lead you into a process that will also redefine any experience that you've ever had with mental health professionals or processes. You're going to experience therapy different. You're going to experience yourself different. You're going to have a complete change in how you see the process of getting well. And it, I believe, what people recognize, and I think this is true across the board, is it's way more accessible.
Yeah.
Meaning, no, I go to some doctor or therapist and I learn all these concepts and CBT and I have all these exercises and it's like I'm at work and I run into something and it's like, oh, I gotta remember that homework and how do I? No. These are lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
Like, and if you move your body and you create hermetic stress on a regular basis and you get sunlight and you're hydrated and you've renegotiated the narrative and how you see yourself, the thing that happens at work that has you scrambling for, like, what assignment do I have to do in order to, like, fix this? It doesn't even need to come up because you completely respond differently versus react. You have a completely different experience with the world around you. You're detached. You're not taking stuff as personal. You see yourself very differently and you... I also believe that the removal of or the deconstruction of the victim mentality, the personality, creates so much room for a person to move in the direction of wellness.
Yeah, it's a big roadblock.
I totally think that. And I'm even more convinced now that I've spent some time with Mark England and Lifted. Don't you think, Jamie?
Totally.
Yeah. Like, it's... So anyway, and that, so here's the reality, right? I love to take credit. We had the self-concept. We wanted to change the narrative. We were working on that assignment. I didn't know Mark process then. I didn't know and lifted, but the universe conspired, right?
Yeah.
So I meet Heather through the work that I do, and Heather owns Sweat Equity. So if you guys are listening, you should check out. She's downtown, amazing human being, and her facility is amazing. Red light, cold, all the stuff, right? Cold plunge, we have all the stuff similar. And she says, hey, Jason, I'm having this workshop at my facility. You should come check it out. So my friend Ephraim and I go sit in. And in one workshop, if you are ever anywhere and you get an opportunity to see Mark England present, jump all over it. Because in one workshop, I was like, it took like 20 minutes. I have to have whatever he's throwing down. I got to have it.
Yeah. That's it right there. Being able to have a radical change in one session. I mean, have an experience that's so powerful that... And that's what happens here. I mean, before we came into this podcast, I was not having it mentally. Getting the sauna, getting the plunge in 14 minutes, my chemistry, my brain has changed. I'm clear-headed. And in the same way with these, you know, the physical movement, with the things that we do here. I mean, you know how I feel about breath work. You know, like these changes in lifestyle things that... You can have access to it anytime. There's no denying that immediate change. And then, you know, that gives you the allowance to work on these, like, long-term narrative changes, this internal dialogue, this, you know, the other pieces of the hexagon, like, they work almost opposite each other to, like, work off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are your hopes for this podcast? Where do you see this? Who do you see listening to this at home? What do you, in a perfect world, foresee going on in their head? Because I think people need to hear these things, and I think people need to see these things and know that this exists. And before you get into it, I do want to just tell a quick aside about, you know, you mentioned earlier you were at another treatment center, and I know some people that were in that process, and I myself got out of treatment and was just kind of lost and wandering, and you know, they told me about the program that you were doing, and I was like, you can do that? That's an option? What do you even mean? I'm like, yes, that makes sense. That makes sense for me internally, that makes sense for my brain, my body. Like, how did I miss the train on this? Like, how did So I think people need to hear about this. And when I came in here and met you for the first time, you know, I'd been jumping in my parents' pool and doing cold plunges in my own way. And it'd been, you know, my own sobriety, like, needed these things and didn't know it.
Whoever's listening to this, hopefully there's a lot of you, but even if there's just one or two, you need to understand, Casey shows up for the interview in swim trunks. And he's like, let's do this. And I was like, you're hired, bro. You're hired. Not really, but he basically.
In my back pocket. Yeah. I had a string bag with me with the trunks. But I'd already heard in a roundabout way about what this process was. But for those that don't know, and I get an opportunity to talk to, you know, potential clients and client and people coming in here, and you know, I talk a lot about this is an easy entry point for a lot of people into therapy, into work on themselves, into this internal process that is so important. But the, you know, some of the physical movement, these other things, it makes sense. Okay, I can get on board with that and the rest will come. And like, you kind of start going through this process and changes start happening before you know it. But yeah, what do you hope to see from this podcast? Who do you hope is listening to this? What do you hope they hear from this? Because I think a lot of people need to hear this and know that this exists. And I hope one day we'll look back and be like, oh, dang, this reached a lot of people.
Totally. We have to cut this part out. I got to grab this book real quick because it answers the question. This is the book right here. But the answer to your question, right, which is, what do I hope? So... I hope for the people that come on the show that they get to be seen. Mm. Like the guests that we've had so far, wanted people to really see. I want us to see each other. Like, I want to really create an atmosphere of like vulnerability, intimacy, safety. And I think a lot of people are seeing that. But here's the sentence from this book. There's something in being seen that brings forth growth. If you beam the light of your attention on me, I blossom. If you see great potential in me, I will probably come to see great potential in myself. If you can understand my frailties and sympathize with me when life treats me harshly, then I am more likely to have the strength to weather the storms of life. The roots of resilience, the psychologist Diana Fosher writes, are to be found in the sense of being understood by and existing in the mind and heart of a loving, attuned, and self-possessed other. And how you see me, I will learn to see myself. So think, when I think about this process here at Emotion, but I think about, why am I getting behind a microphone when I'm terrified? Why am I putting myself out there? It's for that. It's so that people will get a different perspective of themselves, which will hopefully like start the process of change for them.
Hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you for your story. And yeah. Thank you for being you.
Thank you for connecting with us on today's episode of the Emotion Podcast, where we discuss all things mental health. Connect every week as we explore incredibly intimate stories of persistence and hope, delve into mental health education, and explore valuable resources. Available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And visit emotionwellness.com for more information.